The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello and welcome to Positively Pro-Life Podcast. Positively Pro-Life is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation and aims to bring you inspirational stories and conversation, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we seek to restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm your host, Ramil Tani, Education Director at the Federation, and co-hosting with me is our Acting Executive Director, Maria Gallagher. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you so much, Ramil. It's great to be with you today.
It's always good to be here talking on the podcast with you. We have some really good guests and we always have very timely updates on what's happening in the pro-life world today. And well, often in our show, we have talked before on several episodes about the effects of abortion, effects that abortion has on men and women, specifically the mother and father of the unborn child. And a few months ago, Dave Andrusko, who is the editor of National Right to Life News Today, he wrote a compelling article on the grief and loss that grandparents experience when they learn about an abortion decision made by their child. Now, we often discuss the fact that abortion has a profoundly negative impact on those who are directly connected to the choice. But a little talked about reality is the impact it has on the whole family, and especially on individuals whose siblings have been victims of an abortion. Our conversation today is with a sibling survivor, and we hope that you will join us as we dive a little into the deeper ramifications of an abortion choice on siblings. Now, we will get into that conversation just as soon as Maria gives us her update for this week.
Thank you, Ramil. I'm going to switch it up a little bit today and give you some good news.
Oh, that's always welcome.
which is to begin with, we are so happy that people can now register for our Celebrate Life banquet, which will take place October 12th at the Hershey Lodge. And we will have Pete Hegseth, a national broadcaster, a military veteran, father of seven, as our keynote speaker. And we will be honoring the incomparable Michael Chicochopo, the former executive director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation, with our Lifetime Achievement Award. And it is so fitting that we talk about Michael today because it is International Siblings Day, and he has 14 siblings. So that's really remarkable. He's had a remarkable life, and we really want to honor him. So I encourage people to go to our website at paprolife.org and register today for that wonderful banquet. You can sponsor a whole table if you like. Your group or church can sponsor a table. And it's just going to be fantastic. And then while we are on the subject of celebrating, there will be a Night for Life in Northeast Philadelphia. And this comes to us courtesy of Pat Dowling, who is a longtime pro-life advocate. And she's actually responsible for Positively Pro-Life because the podcast was offered to her. She declined, but she recommended us. So we are thrilled to support Pat and this event, which will take place Friday, April the 19th at St. Catherine Parish McBride Hall. You can enjoy great Irish music by the Stanton Family Singers from 7:30 to 8:15. And then there's going to be the popular team trivia contest Quizzo from 8:15 to 10 with prizes for the winners. And all of this benefits pro-life outreach activities. So again, Night for Life in Northeast Philadelphia, Friday, April 19th at St. Catherine Parish. Ramil.
That's two great pro-life events that you don't want to miss. So go on today and register for both of them. Well, it is very fitting that we had today's International Siblings Day. I was not aware of it when we asked Krista to come on. Our guest today is Krista Corbello, founder of Even This Way, a ministry that walks with siblings who have lost a loved one to abortion. Their mission is to provide community and healing to persons experiencing grief and complex emotional impact from their traumatic knowledge of an aborted sibling. Now, Krista is an activist, speaker, and artist, and is also the co-founder of Friendship Explored and Ministry Team Director of Newman Center in Pasadena. She has a master's in psychology from Divine Mercy University, and she has given hundreds of pro-life presentations and trained over 1,000 high school and college leaders on their campuses. Krista, welcome, and thank you for joining us today on Positively Pro-Life Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. And I also didn't know it was International Sibling Day, so thanks for informing me of a new way to honor my sibling. That was awesome. I wish I could come to your event later this month.
Well, that happens to us often, we've noticed. We just line up guests and then we realize that somehow Providence, God, whatever it is that you believe in, just lines it up in at the exact moment that we need to hear something special. So we're very, very grateful that you're here with us today. So first off, you just mentioned that you do have a sibling who's aborted. So tell us your story. Tell us how did you find out, and what was the experience of finding that out and finding out that you are a sibling survivor of an aborted baby?
So I was raised Catholic. I'm a cradle Catholic. And I always had some question marks on my life just based on my family of origin story, not knowing my biological father. And just growing up with these question marks, it was I always kind of associate it with just not knowing my father growing up. But as I started to get involved in ministry and especially started to get involved in the pro-life movement, it was through a Right to Life job that I had. And I was doing youth education, as you kind of mentioned in my bio. So I was giving youth pro-life presentations all across the state of Louisiana, where I'm from. And really, my story of origin unfolded more over the course of those 3.5 years. And I found out eventually, after meeting my biological father in college, I found out eventually that it was, you know, my father had an abortion with a woman, like after my mom. And discovering that was, it felt like some parts of my life made sense. And it was kind of a weird kind of elongated version of PTSD, which I'll talk about a little bit from the psychological research. But because I was in the pro-life movement and I was talking about it very biologically, philosophically, and medically, what abortion was, it became very painful once I found out that I had a sibling. I always just say, like, imagine if you had a sibling who died by car crash or something, like drunk driving, and you were giving presentations on drunk driving and the details of that and the statistics of that, like 70 times a year, like I was. It was just very painful to talk about these medical abortion methods, thinking about the fact that I had a sibling who died like one of these ways. And so my unfolding of that story, which was pretty slow, it was like an elongated PTSD, which the psychological research calls PASS, post-abortion survivor syndrome. And there's a lot of different elements of it. That's like one that stands out. But after kind of discovering it and really, I mean, I'm a Catholic. I've been raised Catholic. So bringing that to the Lord for me personally was a huge part of my healing process. And then also in my research, I talk about kind of moving on and being able to like recover from life. And for me, even this way, this ministry, which was from a lived experience, was a part of me being able to like reclaim parts of my life. And right now it's Easter season. So like letting things be resurrected for me in my faith. And that was like a real source of renewal for me too. So that's where Even This Way came from. That was kind of the beginning stages for me.
You are so eloquent in discussing this, which had to have been a very painful situation for you. How did you come to found Even This Way?
Well, so like she said in my bio, I went to Divine Mercy University, and for the MSP, which is the degree that I got, we have to do a capstone project, not like a thesis paper or, but and it is a research, it's very heavily research oriented, but kind of the way it was proposed to us as grad students is like, basically, if someone reads this capstone project, they should be able to implement something in the church, like a new ministry or apostolate. And so it's not so much about the research about it as like applying the research to do good in the world and in the church. And at the around the same time that I started at DMU, I went to this wonderful women's Catholic conference called Given, the Given Institute or the Given Forum. And it was kind of the same thing, that you apply for this conference with an action plan and with an apostolate that you want to bring into the church. And because those things were kind of happening at the same time, the action plan being the first thing, you bring it to the conference and you receive mentorship for the next year to kind of implement at least a 1 year element of your action plan. But my grad school program was about 2.5, 3 years. And so I basically extended my action plan through my research. And it was kind of those two things together that helped me really launch it. And I mean, obviously I had the heart to research it and the life experience to apply it to what I had lived. So those two things together were like a huge part in even this way being born. And then years after graduating, I turned it into a nonprofit. So that just kind of all happened very organically and naturally.
And that's really beautiful. Because this was born out of your research, can you tell us a little bit about the kind of studies that's out there and what do they tell us about sibling survival loss?
Yeah, so Divine Mercy University is Catholic, as you can probably tell by its name. So, I mean, the basis and foundation of it is what's called the Catholic Christian Meta Model of the Person, which is kind of like a very integrated psychological, theological, and spiritual catechism almost. Like it's like that big of a resource. And I think anyone in the mental health fields would be blessed by the CCMMP published through Divine Mercy University and the professors and the kind of founders of DMU or the Institute for Psychological Sciences, which it was called before. So kind of that foundation is that, people are mated in God's image and there's an incomparable dignity, and abortion violates that dignity. And, you know, the gospel of life with John Paul II talking about abortion affecting the whole family. And in this instance, surviving siblings, like I call it, and what's normally called a private choice, it actually could be very detrimental to people's mental health and their psychology, and especially the spiritual lives of surviving siblings. So that's kind of where the foundation is. And although Even This Way is not a Catholic organization, I've never considered Catholic or pro-life even, because I think compassion is very needed. I think complex is very grief, and not every sibling survivor is going to experience what I experienced, but oftentimes there is kind of a complicated grief about it. So it's not meant none of those statements I said previously were meant to be judgmental towards people who have had abortions or whose parents had abortions. I think compassion is absolutely needed. But I think too that abortion is often disguised as a good choice. So the foundation of the Catholic meta model and again, in Eastertide, this like Christian theme of hope is like a huge foundation for me in the research. But as far as like psychology literature, I will note a couple of them. I think the most significant one would be from Dr. Philip Ney in 2010 from, I believe, UBC in Canada. And he researched maternal pregnancy loss, including abortion, but also including miscarriage, and found some significant differences, which I'm talking statistical significant differences in what siblings experience when their parents have miscarriages and abortion. So sibling survivors, he found, feel unworthiness, doom, lack of meaning in life, existential crisis, survivor's guilt, and a struggle to embrace life fully. So an anecdote that he uses to kind of illustrate the difference between miscarriage and abortion is how is this image of like a family on a beachside, walking on this cliffside, this beautiful sunset. And a miscarriage is like if the children are on the cliffside and one accidentally falls off. So it's kind of like obviously terrible and a huge grief for so many people. And I'm in no way trying to compare the grief. It's more just this is the example that he uses, that in miscarriage, accidents happen. And it's tragic and painful, but the surviving sibling is able to move on in a way because they know it was an accident. And so they can still have a meaningful life. For the case of abortion, that same family on the cliffside at the beach, abortion is like the parents kind of talk to each other and decide one of the children has to go, maybe because they can't afford it, and they push one child off the ledge. And so this research and this anecdote plays or illustrates a little bit, the sibling survivor could feel distrust. They could feel, you know, why wasn't it me? It can make it more difficult. I disagree with Nay, though, that I don't think that it's impossible for siblings to move on. But because it was intentional and not an accident, they feel, kind of a sibling, survivor guilt. Like, why wasn't it me? I felt like I could have been in the same situation as my sibling. So that's probably the biggest piece of research from 2010. Another one that I reference often is the five stages of grief, the Kubler-Ross and Kessler grief model, which a lot of people know about those five stages of grief. But what people may not know is that, you know, they never intended for grief to be linear and for people to see grief as linear. And so I always say too, like, that's a starting point for a lot of people, but not everyone's going to feel every stage of those five stages. And some people, and oftentimes, are going to feel even more stages of grief. So it was never meant to simplify people's grief. So it's not linear. It's not sequential. But I think it helps people experience grief. Another thing that I use is Krell and Rabkin, which I think was from 1979, the effects of sibling death. Now, when in their research and in their topic and what they're talking about, they're specifically talking about like children dying after they're born. So it's not quite abortion, but basically the research is talking about the family response, like as a unit to the death of a child. So basically the parental grief affects the way they parent surviving siblings. And what they found is that there's three kind of roles that a sibling could play after the death of their sibling: haunted, bound, and resurrected. Haunted being like they don't talk about the death of the sibling. It's just this kind of, we don't talk about Bruno, you know, kind of situation. It's hidden. There's secret. There's shame and confusion and distrust. Surviving child can't ask questions about it. The bound child, there could be two different ways you could be a bound child. Either you have a overprotective helicopter parent because they feel so guilty for the death or maybe fearful. So they're, like with the case of abortion, they might feel guilt, like God's going to take away my child, so I have to do everything to protect the child. Or it could be on the contrary, the parent could be kind of giving some subtle rejection to their child, like, I don't deserve this child. This child will be taken away from me. And so they try not to show an emotional attachment. So that's the bound child. And then the third, from the research, the third child role in that family could be resurrected, where a child feels like a replacement for the sibling who died. And so they kind of feel a lack of separation from who the child was or who they could have been and who they are. So that's the Krell and Rabkin effect on sibling death. So all of these to say, these are, I applied all of these obviously to those who are sibling survivors of abortion. So those are probably the top pieces of research in the theological and the psychological.
So we've talked about the obviously detrimental effects of abortion on the siblings, but can you tell me, how can people achieve healing and hope after this experience? Because they have to move on at some point.
So one thing I will say is that there's a part of you that doesn't move on. I remember I gave a talk one time to a group of students and a sibling survivor was in the crowd, and in the Q&A section, they said they were crying through tears. They said, you know, Krista, do you ever get over it? And I said, I mean, no. I mean, I've been giving these talks for 3 years, and you hear my voice kind of shake, and you can tell that I'm still crying about this to some degree. And, you know, I never want to rush people's grief process, I think, because, yeah, I mean, whenever you realize it was a sibling and you have to face that darkness and the very painful elements of that, it is very difficult. So not to make anyone feel like they have to ever really move on from it. But I'm glad you brought that up because Thérèse Rando has a book called How to Go On Living After Someone You Love Dies, which is a long title. But she talks about what I would implement in, and even this way, the six R processes, which are, which the ones I want to highlight are readjusting and reinvesting in life. So readjusting, basically, I kind of think of this like old and new life. And for a sibling survivor, it might be like before you found out about the abortion and after you found out about the abortion. So like, what role did you play in your family? Kind of looking at that Krell and Rabkin research, like, do you feel like you relate to any of those? And also knowing that you don't have to remain that role. You don't have to stay in shame. You don't have to be confused. So trying to like readjust into from your family of origin into like recognizing your wounds, forgiving your parents and those kinds of things. So that's the readjustment phase that Rando discusses. The other one that I think is very important out of the six is reinvesting in life, which Dr. Philip Ney would say is much harder for sibling survivors, which to some degree, I agree. You know, it took me a lot of years, a lot of years. I mean, I started my capstone project or my grad program in 2019, and I still felt like, and I was speaking on the subject matter from 2016. So, you know, this has been a very long process for me. And people who have seen me speak over the years, by the way, they could tell the difference between when I felt, when I was like holding it, like carrying a cross, and if you, they could tell in my voice that I was weak and exhausted versus doing some work and doing some research, putting language to what I was experiencing, talking to trusted family and friends, a counselor and a spiritual director about it. And they could hear the difference in my voice from carry heavy the cross, heavy cross, and feeling like resurrected and free from it. And one of my students, I mean, one of my favorite things one of my students ever told me was, "You sound lighter." And I could tell what she meant by that because it felt lighter in my heart. Like I thought I would only be an impactful speaker if I was still carrying that cross and if it still hurt me 100 tons. But, you know, once I was able to reinvest in life through even this way and through the community of other sibling survivors, that's where I just disagree with Nay that it's not impossible for us. But as a Catholic, I can't believe that. With the, like I said, the virtue of hope. So showing sibling survivors that it's possible to reinvest in life, again, even this way, is that for me, walking with people who've experienced the same as part of that for me, because sibling survivors might really feel so ashamed that they're alive. And I certainly did. I've experienced a lot of suffering in life, not knowing my biological father. I said in the beginning, like that abandonment and rejection from the womb, you know, like my mom was pressured to abort me and she didn't. And so that rejection being kind of the heart of my my woundedness, really like my signature theme that has always come up. So to find out I had a sibling die by abortion, you know, even all the suffering that I've experienced and rejection and abandonment and all those wounds, I still felt, well, I had a life though. My sibling didn't. Like, why me? Why me? Why am I here? Why is my sibling not here? Why do I get to laugh? Why do I get to have friends? Why do I get to blow bubbles? Like, and my sibling never got any of this, you know? So reinvesting in life is so important, so possible. And for me, it's very communal. I think we're very communal and social creatures. And we all have feelings, and sometimes it's just difficult to identify them and maintain them. But I think through community, it's very possible. Not just people who've experienced sibling, like having a sibling die by abortion, but for me, like even non-sibling survivors and just trusted friends who love you and are willing to hold your hand in the darkness, ask you how you are, and see you and your suffering, and also see that that's not the end of it for you. Was a huge part of it for me and very possible, like I said, for sibling survivors.
I think a lot of the language that you used during this time, I've done a bit of trauma training, trauma work kind of things, and that's the same language, the ones of grief, the ones of shame, the ones of, but also the ones of redemption and healing. And you can, I mean, from the language that you speak, it's a real trauma that siblings experience when they find out, right? So could you really quickly just share with us what your ministry does to help sibling survivors? How can they reach out to you as well?
Sure. So I wrote my capstone to be as 2 weekend retreats. So one being focusing on the grief and learning how to communicate that, and the other one on the reinvesting life. So those are the two parts of the same kind of fully together. It'd be one retreat, but it was written as 2 separate retreats, which I have never done actually. But I've walked with siblings. So a lot of times they'll find me on social media, because when I found out about my sibling who died by abortion, I Googled once a week, I have a sibling who died by abortion, and I couldn't find anything. Turns out there is great ministries and retreats called from Lumina Ministries. They've been doing retreats for 20 years. So I highly recommend anyone who wants a retreat to look up Lumina Ministries. But what I've done has been a lot softer and slower, and not a retreat, but just walking with people. They email me back and forth. I want to start a sibling survivor small group, basically kind of doing it in a small group setting. But very few people are interested in doing that. But just a lot of times just reading stories on my blog of other people and them being able to talk to me just on social media or through email is basically all I've been able to do, because I've never gotten to get that retreat format. But I think one day I'll be able to do that. So just being a presence, a loving presence, is how I feel, how I am able to minister.
And with just 30 seconds left, how can people find you?
At Even This Way on most social media platforms, and eventhisway.org is where you can find more about my ministry, some panel discussions I've had with other sibling survivors, and the blog. And you can share your story there too.
This has been just so tremendous. Thank you so much, Krista Corbello, founder of Even This Way, a ministry that walks with siblings who have lost a loved one to abortion.
Thank you so much. I appreciate y'all.
Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation all across the Commonwealth. The Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the largest single-issue pro-life organization in the Keystone State, with nearly 40 local county-based chapters. We shine a spotlight on the most vulnerable individuals, from the very dawn of life to the twilight of life. Thank you for joining us for the program today. And remember, there is always a reason to choose life.